Ready?
Our evening began in Peter Sechelle's comfortable study in his New York townhouse.
No sleep till
Brooklyn! Yeah! Brooklyn, Bronx, Queens, is that in? From the Battery to the top of Manhattan.
Yo, rope!
Everybody, my name is Jim Shear, and welcome to the Brouhaha. Today, we celebrate the 20th anniversary of the Beastie Boys' Ill Communication. May 24th, 1994, the Beastie Boys put out Ill Communication. Now, we've done this, I shouldn't say from time to time on the Brouhaha, but we've done it once, a track-by-track commentary of an album. We did it with Hot Sauce Committee Part 2, and we will do it with Ill Communication. And joining me, Beastie fan and friend, Prof D. Prof, welcome back to the Brouhaha.
Thank you very much, Jim. Glad to be here.
And I don't want to make this intro too fat, because Ill Communication is almost an hour in length. So if we need to catch up on small chit-chat, we can do that during one of the instrumentals. Sound good?
That is an awesome plan.
All right, so I'm going to say 3, 2, 1, go. And when I say go, hit your space bar. You ready?
Okay.
All right, yeah. 3, 2, 1, go. We begin with the dog saying, I love you.
There you go.
You got the dog?
Wasn't that the... That was Mike D's dog, okay?
Mike D's dog, Rufus. And when did you get the album?
The day it came out.
Do you remember where?
I do not remember where.
I'm trying to figure out where it comes. You go.
Yeah, I'm going to say it was somewhere down in Oakland, because I was a kid at the time.
Okay.
So it was probably, Oasis.
Okay. Perhaps. I'm going to save my story for an instrumental, because this is maybe my favorite song on the album.
Your favorite song?
I think it is, and I love that they shouted out Rod Carew, and on the video they showed his baseball card from the Angels, because he did play for the Twins. I don't have that card that they showed in the video, but I do have a bunch of California Angels cards, and I don't have that many Minnesota Twins cards when Rod Carew played for the Twins.
Yeah.
But I remember that I came home, as I was driving home from the record store, I put the tape into the tape deck, and the first time I heard the song, when they shout out Lee Perry, I thought they shouted out Luke Perry from 90210.
Wow, that would have been an odd shout-out.
But I thought if anyone could get...
They were down.
If anyone could get away with a Luke Perry shout-out, it would be the Beastie Boys.
Yeah, I would expect maybe a Dylan shout-out. Oh. That would be awesome.
And this, of course, was great live when they do, oh, yes, indeed, it's fun time. I'm a little behind right now. And then we go into the, this is the final verse, with MCA rocking the short shot, right? Yeah, there we go.
Now, you're going to touch on, where does this video fall in your rankings of videos? Because it's pretty high up there for me.
If you go on YouTube and you see my greatest Beastie Boys music videos of all time, this is number two.
Number two?
Number two.
Nice.
Now, where does it fall for you?
I don't know, three maybe?
Okay.
I think So What You Want and Sabotage rank above this.
Okay. That's fair.
I would say number three.
Number three. Not bad. Another thing I want to point on before the song is over. It happened so quickly, everyone. I can't help it. It's been so long since we've done this. But this was in 1994 when everyone was saying Gen X was slackers. And Mike D says, you say I'm 20-something, I should be slacking, but I'm working harder than ever, and you can call it macking. He's a newlywed. He's not a divorcee. So Mike D gave us hope in Generation X. Just want to point that out.
Generation.
And remember when the Beastie Boys were on Vibe magazine around the time? They gave an interview In the movie Reality Bites, wanted to use a Beastie Boys song in the movie. Mike D, I guess, saw the movie, wasn't happy with it, because he says, we're not a generation of slackers, and they put no Beastie Boys song in Reality Bites.
Nice.
Yeah.
Well, they're never ones to sell out.
Yes.
They stay true to their principles.
And now we're on to Tough Guy.
So this was a little bit of a transition. I mean, they had some non-hip-hop on previous album, but this was really the first, like, really straight punk since way back in Pollywogs 2 days.
Pollywogs 2, but prior to Ill Communication, the Beastie Boys put out some old bullshit, and maybe by putting that out, they were encouraged to do this. But I was trying... My Beastie game is so off right now. Some old bullshit came out before Ill Communication, right?
That is correct.
Okay.
Not long before, but yeah.
Yeah. So maybe they were just in the hardcore frame of mind, and now Tough Guy's over. I felt like we'd have...
Well, it's only a minute or so. What?
I feel like we could do a podcast on each of these songs.
I don't think that's possible.
And if this podcast ends up being a mess... It is very Beastie-esque, because sometimes they would come off of those hiatuses, and their live shows would be sloppy like this, although they were very enjoyable.
Well, I think the bar that we need to compare against is the when they re-released the remastered version, and there was the commentary for each of the album. And that was a little bit of a hot mess, too, so I feel like all right.
And I feel like those commentaries, the audio level was very low on all of them. Like, when I listen to the commentaries on Paul's Boutique and Ill Communication and Check Your Head, I've really got to blast it.
Yeah.
So, we're on track number 3 now. B-Boys, Making with the Freak Freak. I think this is one of the most underrated Beastie Boys non-singles out there. And my only problem with it is that they recorded it with that bullshit microphone, and the vocals are so dirty you can't even understand what they're saying.
Yeah, this is definitely one of those where you had to, like, go try to figure out, like, some of the lyrics are almost indecipherable.
Mm-hmm.
It's a little bit frustrating, but yeah, I agree with you. I think this is, like, this is a solid song in my opinion. And no love.
And if they busted it out live? And they sold it like they did with Root Down? I've never heard this song live. And just a quick story about the distorted vocals. When I was in graduate school, I had to take an audio course. And we had to... The final project was to record someone. And I was talking about making their vocals all distorted. And the teacher said, what are you talking about? I'm like, well, listen to a Beastie Boys album. You can't understand any of the vocals. And then he said to me, well, why would you do that? I'm like, I don't know, because the Beastie Boys do it.
And they're like, yeah, so the Beastie Boys jumped off a bridge, would you?
So, long story short, and the kid that came in for the project actually did a cover of Get It Together. What a coincidence. And we did not make his vocals dirty. They were clean. And I think I ended up getting an A- on the project.
Clean vocals.
But if I used the bullshit microphone, I probably would have gotten a D.
Yeah. Well, that was a good choice on your part then.
And Mike D, at the time of this album, was wearing a lot of golf gear. So you'll hear some golf clothes references on this album.
I, for one, would love to see the boys on the court, or you know, out on the green.
Yes.
I don't think they have a whole lot of golf skills.
You know what? Because Mike was turning into a businessman at the time, I think he might have played some golf around 94.
Well, here's where my logic comes in. You recall when we were in Vegas for the $2 bill tour.
Yes.
And we were lucky enough to be able to hang out up in the penthouse suite.
Yes.
Which featured the bowling lane.
Mm-hmm.
And when they first came in, they were, you know, playing around and joking around and threw a couple balls down the lane.
Mm-hmm.
And Mike in particular, no offense, but had just terrible, terrible form. He doesn't strike me as the most athletic of the group.
But this is apples and oranges. Bowling and golf?
I don't know.
Big ball, small ball?
So he's good with small ball.
If you're a businessman and you network, you have to play golf, I would think.
Yeah, but you don't have to play golf well.
Okay, so maybe he plays golf, but not well.
Yeah.
This is a great time for a tangent because it's an instrumental. Bobo on the corner.
Yeah.
He gets his own song, and then he leaves the group to play with Cypress Hill. Cypress Hill and the Beastie Boys, and he goes with Cypress Hill.
Yeah, that was a bad career move. Although maybe that was more regular work.
Yes.
They at least put out an album every year or two.
Yes.
He's like, guys, come on, when are you going to put out an album?
And Bobo's a more featured...
maybe?
Yeah, Bobo's a more featured member of Cypress Hill than he ever was with the Beastie Boys.
That's right.
All
right,
so now we go to Root Down, the Beastie Boys sampling an old Jimmy Smith record. And I got to be honest with you, Prof.
Liberally sampling.
What's that?
I said liberally sampling.
Literally sampling Root Down.
Yeah.
I got to be honest with you. When they released this as the third or fourth single off this album?
Yeah, I believe so.
Third single? I thought to myself, man, I don't know, I'm not feeling Root Down. Even during the whole Quadrophonic Stereo tour in 95, I still wasn't feeling it. But year after year after year, they kept playing it and playing it and playing it. They played it at every show, and maybe around 98, I finally saw the genius of Root Down. So the Beastie Boys had to work on me for this one, but I finally came around.
I definitely appreciate Root Down better live.
Oh my gosh.
Especially with Mixmaster Mike.
Ooh.
I love the version where they drop in Apache.
Now remember...
in the Root Down.
Yeah, but remember, Hurricane dropped in the Apache at the Tibetan Freedom Concert pre-Mixmaster Mike.
Yeah, so okay, so I'll give credit where credit's due.
But yeah, there's just some beats that mix.
Yeah. To a whole other level.
Oh, but the live version and all the beats, and I think 2004 era Mixmaster Mike was dropping in one of his own homemade beats, and even that sounded good.
Yeah.
You know, let me just put things into context here. 2004, we were all geeked out about Two the Five Boroughs. 10 years prior, the Beastie Boys put out Ill Communication. Prof, it's been 10 years since the Beastie Boys put out To the Five Boroughs. Is that not nuts?
I mean, when you look back, although, I mean, even at the time, if you think about, like you said, it was 10 years from Ill Communication to the Five Boroughs, and we got one friggin' album in between there.
I know.
One proper album. I won't count... Aglio,
right, because it was only, 10 minutes, if that?
That's right.
Probably less than that.
Yeah, 12.
Or maybe 12, more than that.
10 minutes, and maybe more if you bought the Japanese version with two extra tracks.
And they had, Sober Violence?
Might have pushed 13 minutes.
Yeah. And apologies to Beastie Universe out there. My Beastie game, a bit off. I did not do the tune-up show in a club the night before this podcast. Maybe I should have done that. I should have played at the 9:30 club before I played the Tibetan Freedom concert.
Yeah, well,
but,
oh well.
Hey, we're busy. But and the reason I'm doing this is because I was talking to someone about this being the 20th year anniversary of Ill Communication, and I thought to myself, we're in May 24th, oh my gosh, it's right around the corner, so we needed to do it, and we needed to do it in a timely manner.
And I think it's really proper that you and I do this.
Oh my gosh.
This was right around the time, quite honestly, that you and I really bonded.
Yes.
At Lollapalooza 94.
This was where our friendship blossomed. Yes. Because we always knew about each other. And we've told the story before on the Brouhaha. It was not the Polaris Amphitheater. I did see the Beastie Boys at the Polaris Amphitheater, but you weren't at that show. But it was the Starlight Amphitheater. I gave you my ticket through the fence. You got your stub. You got into the pavilion area, and we rocked out to this song right here, Sabotage.
I know.
This song
was UB, Joe, Jen, formerly Evanosky.
Yeah. And
shout out
Brand,
to Jen.
And Brand, was Brandy there?
I believe she was, yeah.
So this song came out of nowhere. There's no other Beastie Boys song like Sabotage. And I guess the story is there was a an engineer or someone that worked at the studio. His name was Chris. And every time the Beastie Boys would jam out on this song, he's like, "Yeah, that's the jam." So they would call it Chris Rock. And then Ad Rock finally pieced it together, and he pieced together one of the great rock songs of the 1990s.
Well, because originally this was just the instrumental, and then the lyrics came like way afterwards.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Oh, yeah. And Rick Rubin.
For them, I bet it was like a throwaway.
It was,
and then it became probably, arguably, their biggest hit ever.
Yeah, it's good for that Chris guy that he was around. And speaking of Lollapalooza, they would stop right here. And they'd stop for a good minute. And I was so into the show, I'm like, "Ooh, did I miss it?" And then they kick back into it. I'm like, "Oh, no, I didn't." They're into that. And here it is right now. Yeah, there it is. Oh, yeah. And this is where the mosh pit was just going nuts. Kids were throwing grass.
That was definitely the mosh period. Everybody in their flannel shirts moshing around.
But even in the pageant era, when the Beastie Boys played Sabotage, the crowd would mosh. And it wasn't a violent mosh. It was just it was a nostalgic mosh.
That's right.
And this part always reminded me of Alibaba and the 40 Thieves. Alibaba and the 40 Thieves. Alibaba and the 40 Thieves.
The slow build up.
Yeah.
And then the break.
Oh, yeah.
The drop.
Now, Rick Rubin was talking about the song last year in Rolling Stone, and he says it's a rock song that borrows from hip-hop. Because, you know, a lot of times hip-hop songs will borrow from rock songs, but this is rock and foundation using hip-hop elements, and I think he hit the nail on the head.
Yeah.
And we should also point out, before it's over, great music video.
Yes.
Although although not in my top two. And
probably two for me. But
okay, yeah, it's two for you. And I heard that they did a performance footage in their costumes for Sabotage, but they never used it. So one day, I would love to see the performance outtake from Sabotage. If it exists.
Probably.
And talk about the 1-2-3 punch of Ill Communication. Root Down, Sabotage, Get It Together. Ooh.
One of the best three song sequences in Beastie history,
In the history of music. Eat that, Beatles and Led Zeppelin. Now, correct me if I'm wrong, but wasn't this song getting shopped around college radio before the album came out?
Wow, I don't know.
Because there's the Get It Together. Well, there's the Get It Together maxi single, and there's also the Get It Together cassette single, and on that was Sabotage and Get It Together.
Right.
And then a lot of the promo footage was 1-2 Oh My God. That was on a lot of the promotional material the Beastie Boys were putting out.
Yeah.
No, I want everyone to know that I've heard this song performed live twice. Prof, you saw it performed live at Lollapalooza. Lollapalooza in Columbus, Q-Tip did not come out for this song. He did in Pittsburgh, totally messed it up. And then I saw the Beastie Boys perform it without Q-Tip in Cleveland on the Quadrophonic Stereo Tour. They also messed it up. But the reason is Q-Tip would hang out at the G-Sun, and he would just go through rhyme after. So this was just sort of a Q-Tip freestyle session, and they pieced it together around Beastie lyrics. So he had no structure. Maybe he was rhyming for 5 or 10 minutes, and they just took his best rhymes and stuck it into this song. But I've never heard this song performed perfectly or even near perfectly.
I don't think it has ever been performed perfectly, whether you heard it or not.
And I know, and they were doing it.
It's like this podcast.
Right. It's beautifully imperfect, like this track-by-track commentary. Now, they did bust out Get It Together on the In The Round tour, because Tribe Called Quest was opening up for the Beastie Boys. They did not play it on the Cleveland stop. of the End of Round Tour, unfortunately.
And they didn't do this at the Tibetan Freedom Concert either.
No, they didn't.
The Tribe was there, right?
Yeah, they were there. Yeah.
Or am I misremembering?
No, I think they played right before the Beastie Boys.
DC?
Yeah. Now, I don't know where I'm pulling this from, but I think I remember Ad-Rock saying this is one of his favorite Beastie Boys instrumentals ever.
Really?
Yes. But you gotta admit, it is smooth with a letter V. Oh my God, there's the one too, oh my God. Sorry I used the Lord's name in vain, but I just got too into it.
There you go.
And
yeah, this is, whenever I hear this, I always wonder what's in the archives, in the vault, because, like, you know, when Ad-Rock talks about, you know, got my own group called the Nasal Tongues.
Yeah.
That was Be Real.
And Q-Tip.
And him.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like, you know, do they have some album walked away?
Yeah. And the Beastie, this is the Beastie obsessive fan in me. When he, I think the Ione line is so clever. She's the cheese and I'm the macaroni. But I wonder if he ever regrets putting her in a song now that they're no longer married.
Yeah, probably. Well, maybe not.
Yeah, but, like, or, you know, it was like, hey, I'm in the moment. This is my wife. Of course I'm going to put her in a song.
I think it's kind of like one of those things, like, that it's like getting a tattoo. Somebody's name, and then you break up and you're like, right. What do I do now?
Well, I guess my thinking is it's such a great lyric, but I can't enjoy it as much as I want to. That's what I'm saying.
That's right.
Yeah.
It's a melancholy in retrospect.
Oh my goodness. I'm having a good time, Prof.
All right, now we can get caught up now here with instrumental track. What else are we missing here?
And the stuff that goes on behind the scenes of a podcast, just to get this going. But we got it off the ground, albeit a rocky start. Now we are on Sabrosa. This was one of the instrumentals that the Beastie Boys played live frequently. Now, was this the one where they also had, like, Ad-Rock would be like, and you won't stop? This was the one he sang on a little bit, yeah. No lyrics on the album version, but when they played live, they added a few.
And you won't stop, and you won't quit.
Yeah.
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 With, like, the distorted kind of...
Well, the Peter Frampton vocal tube, right? Or was that on this one?
Yeah, that's right. I think so, yeah.
Yeah, and it's very good. Some people maybe don't like the Beastie Boys instrumentals, but it's good that they had them back in 94 because their shows got so intense, you needed to take a time out.
That's right, yeah, just a little breather for them, for the fans, mm-hmm. You know, and then, like, you ramp up and then you, you know, hit, like, round two.
Yeah, this is where you catch your breath. This is the the intermission, the halftime. And fans, people don't realize this, they were just rabid about the Beastie Boys in 94. Check Your Head brought them back in the game. 94,
yeah.
They were arguably one of the biggest bands on the planet. And this was also the heyday of moshing. And people would mosh during Sure Shot. I got trampled during Sure Shot once. It was hard to mosh during Sabrosa.
People tried,
but thank God for the instrumentals. And 20 years later, it works perfectly in a podcast because now we're all caught up.
There you go.
And I love
when they do these, when they add the section of the show and they would introduce it as this is the sexy part of the show.
Yeah.
And, you know, and then they'd come out like in their blue leisure suits and stuff.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. So we move on to the update.
Yes.
And that says the horn on it, right? Hurrah! Let's see if I'm right. And I also want to point out, Prof, that in the Beastie canon, everyone always talks about Paul's Boutique, licensed to Ill as the old school classic. Check Your Head is the one that put the Beastie Boys back on the map. But this sometimes is underappreciated, but it's a very important album for the Beastie Boys.
Well, I think it's interesting is like the placement of this album in people's lists of favorite albums.
Yeah.
Depends on when they got into them.
Mm-hmm.
Because you have a lot of people that kind of got into them in 94, 95, and they'll rank Ill Communication really high.
Yes.
You know, near the top. And then, like, folks that have been, you know, not that I'm trying to say one way or the other, better, worse, whatever, but, like, people that have been fans for much longer tend to put it lower on the scale, I think, from what I've seen, so...
Because, yeah, when people ask me, oh, favorite, mine's always Check Your Head.
Yeah.
And then it's hard to, I mean, Paul's Boutique is so good, and License to Ill is so good, and Hello Nasty's so good. But
yeah.
I will say this. I was doing some thinking. I was looking at my old cassette tapes. The track listing is totally worn off of Ill Communication. And I thought to myself, Ill Communication is my probably most listened to Beastie Boys album of all time. Because I remember I just couldn't wait for it to come out. May 24th, 1994. I listened to it probably every day that summer. And then a lot for the rest of the 90s. And then every so often I go back and listen to it. So if you have a album total, I've probably listened to Ill Communication more than any other Beastie Boys album.
Well, I think the interesting thing for me is that, like, if you look at everything up to this point, every album was so different than the previous
yes.
album.
Beautiful point.
And for this album, this was the first time that they actually put out two albums in a row that were more or less, you know, very similar.
Yes.
Right? At least in terms of the approach and the makeup. And,
mm-hmm.
you know, and I think for a lot of people, it was like, at least for me, it was like, this is a great album, but Check Your Head is the better of the two.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And so if it's like, oh, these are the basically similar albums, it's clearly the lesser of those two, you know.
Now, Prof, I was in a discussion with someone earlier this week, and they said that Ill Communication is a more polished form of Check Your Head.
Well, that's probably,
like a better thought out version of Check Your Head.
More mature. It's definitely more mature.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, as we talked about earlier with the microphones, it's still not what I'd call polished, right?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I mean, from a production standpoint, like, you know, I don't think, I mean, probably To the Five Boroughs is the most polished album, I would say.
Okay. You can hear every lyric, too, on To the Five Boroughs.
Right. Right.
So we move on to Futterman's Role. So in 1994, I am listening to MCA as if he were Jesus. And I don't mean to be sacrilegious about that. I just felt like he was this wise man. He was throwing out all this deep stuff, and I was just an apostle soaking it all in. Once again,
okay.
Not saying MCA is better than Jesus. I just felt like this was the guy to go to for good vibes and good wisdom and the good word. So when Futterman's Role came out, I remember MCA saying, Futterman's Role is when two are served, then you may eat. And I thought, wow. That's such a selfless act because so many people sit down to dinner and they just start eating their food right away. But hold up, wait for your brother to eat. Wait for the other to eat before you dine. But then I found out later that the Futtermans were family friends of the Yalks. And I guess it was, you know, eight people sitting down to dinner and the Futterman guy said, when two are served, then you may begin to eat. So it was more of like, when two people get the food, Danny, don't wait for the whole people of eight people getting the food. That would take forever. So then it wasn't as...
It lost some of its luster.
But in 94, I thought this was straight out of the words of Buddha. When two are served, then you may begin to eat.
It sounds very Zen.
Right.
you know, the cost, like, oh, very confusing.
But it was now I think of it as an impatient New Yorker who just wants to eat his food and he doesn't want to wait for the other six members to gather around a table and eat their food. So, I hope I didn't ruin this song or that meaning for anyone. Futterman's Roll. And not to knock my wife, she does not practice Futterman's Roll.
She just dives right in?
She doesn't wait for me. So...
Ah.
Hey.
We don't want to go there.
I know. I shouldn't even have said that. But I do practice Futterman's Roll, and I practice Futterman's Roll from the idea and belief that I had in 1994. Yeah, there you go. And I should also point out, this is a nice, this is a fun video on the Sabotage Home video, because it has all the outtakes from when they dressed up as 70s cops.
Yeah. I like when this is the one where they went to the basketball court, right?
No, that's Ricky's thing.
Oh, that's okay.
Yeah,
they're
dressed up in, you know, their Sabotage gear. And this song
almost
has enough teeth to it where you could throw some rhymes on top of it. So I'm wondering if the Beastie Boys ever toyed with putting rhymes on this song.
I think the D-Boys toyed with it.
Well, there was a time when I wanted to put lyrics to every Beastie Boys instrumental. Because there was Son of Neckbone, I had some rhymes for that. Years later,
yeah.
I had some rhymes for Cousin of Death, but I just don't have time to make rhymes for every Beastie Boys instrumental. But maybe one day, when I retire, I'll do that.
Right.
So now, we move on to... All right, hear this.
Side two.
This was a nice hip-hop track.
Now, this was in the old days, All Right Here This was the first track on side two, correct?
Professor, I've got my cassette out right now, and yes, this leads off side B. Or side two.
And I thought, you know, so there was a you kind of ease out of side one,
mm-hmm.
and then flip it over, and then you start right.
Well, that's how you had to do it back in the day. You had to hit hard with side B. Now it's the age of the... Well, in the age of the CD, you just went from 1 to 22 or whatever. You had
That's
to tell
right.
that story, but this, you had to kind of tell two stories. And then Chuck D, when Public Enemy put out It Takes a Nation of Millions to Hold Us Back, side B was originally side A and vice versa. Did you know that?
Yes, I did,
yeah.
actually.
So... the beginning.
I remember when I first heard it, I thought it was really odd that, like, their big single from that was, like, what, almost the last song of the album. Fight the Power is,
yeah.
like, I think literally,
yes.
like, the second to last song.
Now, at the beginning of the song, there's a guy going, cutting and scratching and cutting and scratching, right?
Yeah.
His name, Mike Holman, right?
That's correct.
Now... When Mixmaster Mike joined the Beastie Boys in 1998, I didn't know his last name. And to me, that voice kind of sounded like Mixmaster Mike. So for a brief moment in time, I thought that was Mixmaster Mike doing the intro pre-Beastie Boys. But that is not the case.
Wow.
Do you want to drop some old school knowledge, Prof?
Well, so this was an old television show called Graffiti Rock. Which was like early mid-80s, I think it was, like 83, 84,
mm-hmm.
maybe. And it was one of these, like, it was very, like, almost public TV kind of vibe to it, like, very low budget. But it was one of the earliest, like showcases for, like, hip-hop, like, you know, on TV. And Michael Holman, I think, was, like, a DJ,
mm-hmm.
or a video DJ, I think. And it was, like, his big thing. And it didn't last very long at all. But I think I have like the intro, the first show, and they had like, I think it was Run DMC and the Treacherous Three, I think we're on.
Whoa.
So, there you go.
But he got to be on a Beastie Boys album.
That's right.
The one that we're talking about 20 years later. Now remember, when they played this live, wouldn't they sing, so what you wanna be, what you wanna be? So you wanna be an MC, huh? So what you wanna be, what you wanna be. So they added a little sum to the lyrics when they performed the song live.
That's right.
And then we've got Eugene's Lament. Back in 1994, me, my friend Joe, Prof, you were not in this movie yet. We created a 4.5-hour movie about two immigrants coming to America looking to grab the American dream. That did not happen. Anyway, there's a scene in that movie where this song is used.
Sadly, I remember that.
It was some type of sheik from a rich oil-bearing country, and he ends up getting killed in the scene.
Now, was Joe the sheik?
Joe was the sheik.
Yeah. And, but, you know, of course, the Italian guy gets to be the sheik.
Yeah. So Joe...
But Pacino can be the Mexican in Scarface. Close enough, yeah.
Well, Joe is a very talented actor.
Oh, he is very versatile.
He could, yes, he could play many different types. He actually played 3 or 4 different characters in the movie. And I forget how the sheik was killed in the movie. And because my world music collection wasn't deep, I thought, well, this works perfectly for the scene.
It sounds worldly.
And so at the end of the summer, we had a premiere for this movie.
Uh-huh.
And we invited all of our friends. We had an intermission. It's a 4.5-hour movie, so we had an intermission 2 hours in. We had a concert in my living room. I almost got thrown out of the living room window. Fortunately, I didn't.
Yep.
The only friend to stay for the whole 4.5 hours was Prof D. And I should also point out that we had a little lottery giving out D-Boys cassettes. That was my rap group at the time. And we rigged the lottery so Prof D would win, so he would know our music, so we could recruit him into our band.
Yeah.
And it worked out, and you've been a D-Boy ever since.
And
Prof, a year or two later, we performed this song live with a flute.
On your back porch.
On my back porch.
Yeah.
I wonder if the...
And you should mention who played the flute.
Now, what's that?
You should mention who played the flute.
Well, we played it 1 year on my back patio. I think it was a girl named Kelly. But the following year, we played Sure Shot live in my driveway with a live flute. And a girl named Tori was playing the flute, who is now my wife.
Yes.
The Beastie Boys.
I'm trying to make up for your comment earlier.
Yes.
Shout out to Tori.
She's a
Thank
beautiful
you.
Girl. We've been married almost 10 years. And but she did not play flute loop. I think it was Kelly Simile sounds right. I don't know if that's right, but Kelly,
yeah.
if you're listening, thank you for playing flute loop on my patio. And this was also a favorite live joint of the Beastie Boys.
Yeah, which is I love it, but it's so like short. Like
yeah.
It's not like 2 verses done, like boom.
This in an odd way reminds me of Super Disco Breakin'. Just short songs that were really great live.
Oh, okay. I always thought that this was sort of like the, like this and Dope Little Song, which was one of the B-sides.
Oh,
I'm
sorry, I cut you off. What were you going to say?
You know, kind of cut the same, you know, all right, just quick.
Mm-hmm.
Like 2 verses done, like 2 minutes done.
Yep. And then the flute was on the brain for the Beastie Boys because Sure Shot opens up the album and that had flute in it too. Ooh, now this. When you talk about favorite non-singles off of Ill Communication, I think of Get It Together kind of as a single because it has its own single. It was put out to college radio. But All Right Hear
the
This.
Remixes, yeah.
All Right Hear This and Do It are my favorite non-singles on this album. And when the Beastie Boys did the whole tour with just instruments, They would play this song, and it sounded great because it's that nice bass line and Ad-Rock just going up and down on his guitar. Wah, 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 wah. Ooh, this is so good.
Now, did they ever, did Biz ever join them for this song, live?
I don't know.
That you know of?
I don't know, but this makes 2 albums in a row for Bismarck Key, and he would continue that streak for a while.
Yeah. I feel like he was just like, you know, he hung around the studio a lot because he had nothing else to do or something, you know.
And according to the Beastie Boys, he would go off on candy runs every so often. Ooh, listen, 6.7 on the Richter scale. Ooh, that's such a good rhyme. And I never fail.
Fail.
Luke to Darth Vader, I'm a souped up sucker, and I'll see you all later. Oh, yeah. Are you kidding me? Do what? Mike D's nuts. People like to talk about nuts a lot in 94. Because remember the Chronic? D's nuts. And I remember we'd go around our dorm and we'd be like, hey, do you guys have that CD? And they're like, what CD? CD's nuts. It was something like that.
It's up for it every time.
Yeah. If you were in college in the early 90s, you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, and it never
Can't
got
start
old.
The fire! Now, they sing Billy Joel there, and then a year later, they honorarily name Billy Joel the fifth Beastie Boy.
Yeah.
So this, I'm sure this was where that spark started. I actually...
Did you ever think anybody in an interview asked him about that?
My makeup.
And then he kind of looked at him like, "What are you talking about?"
Well, listen to this, Prof. My makeup lady for Top 20 does makeup for Billy Joel, and
okay.
I am trying to play it, and I'm playing it with kid gloves. But I want to do an interview with Billy Joel where I just strictly talk about the Beastie Boys and how he is the fifth member of the Beastie Boys. But I don't want him to take it the wrong way.
Yeah, he, I don't know. He strikes me as an
all right
guy.
He might like, yeah. Maybe. Oh,
he's
what a good
man. Like, you know, he's.
you just sounded like Jimmy the cab driver right there.
You know.
Yeah, you know.
You know, Billy Joel might do it.
I always, like years and years ago, I saw him probably around this time. He played over at Carnegie Hall in Pittsburgh. And it was one of those question-answer kind of shows.
Uh-huh.
Just him with a keyboard for like 3 hours.
Wait, were you there?
Yeah, I was there.
Why didn't you ask him?
Maybe it was before this. I don't know.
That would have been...
But it was just him asking for, you know, oh, I'm sorry, should I BSing for like 3 hours? It seemed like, you know, he's a chatty guy.
Yeah, like, I think... He'd be fine with it, but I don't want to cost anyone their jobs or cross the line. But I think it would be an amazing interview for at least 200 people on planet Earth. The 200 people that listen to the Brouhaha.
Now, is he still doing his regular thing at Madison
yeah.
Square Garden?
Yes, he is.
Well, see, there you go.
Yeah. So,
but
enough about Billy Joel. We are on to Ricky's theme. Ricky Powell gets his own song. It's a nice song. And I've told this story before on the Brouhaha. When the Beastie Boys performed the song on Saturday Night Live, I almost lost my mind. I thought, you're on national TV and you're going to play an instrumental? This is how you're going out? And it was their second song of the night, too. But little did I know that they would follow it up with a song that follows it on L Communication. And before, I'm just building up to the next song. When the remastered version of Ill Communication came out, there is an acoustic version of the song we're about to hear. And it all makes sense because the song we're about to hear begins with that little snip of it's a acoustic version.
That's right.
And everyone knows what song I'm talking about, so I don't know why I'm speaking so vaguely right now, but... Since I started speaking vaguely, I will finish speaking vaguely.
There's no suspense here.
There might be some fans who are like, it's killing me. I forget what song's next. It's the one about, was it Bob Mack's friend? He was kind of big. He was rough with the Beastie Boys on the G-Sun basketball court. So they embellish this character, and he gets his own song.
I think my favorite part of that was it's when Mike's like, he's like the guy in the Happy Time commercial, yeah, and then he just can't stop laughing.
And that reference probably goes over a ton of kids' heads right now. But that Tom, it was Tom Bosley. Tom Bosley was a little hefty. Yeah. He was a little hefty.
A little bit.
And he was pitching for hefty. I remember now. I think Train put out a song a couple years ago and maybe mentioned Hefty. And then I interviewed Train and I said, do you know the last person to reference Hefty Bag was the Beastie Boys? And then they graciously said, you know what? They probably did it a lot cooler than we did. And I thought to myself, yeah, you're right, but it was nice of you to say that.
Yeah, I don't know if Train really ranks on real high on the cool scale.
But they are fans, and they appreciate they appreciated being mentioned in the same sentence. But here we go, Heart Attack Man. This is the acoustic version, which you can get on the remastered re-edition or whatever they call it of Ill Communication put out a few years ago. Ooh, listen to this one.
Oh, God.
Okay, let's take it from here.
Oh, my. The song. Ooh. This might be my favorite Beastie Boys hardcore song. This or A Grade on Mojo.
Yeah, A Grade's pretty much up there, I think. But, and I remember, like, when, listening to the album, that, like, the first time, it was like, what the hell is this?
Yeah.
It was so different than anything that they had, really done.
And I'm so glad that they...
Post hip-hop,
Yeah. And I'm telling you, I think when they put out some old bullshit, hardcore was really on their brain, because they even use... Is his name Tim Summers from Noise the Show? Who's on the end of this song? So you heard him on some old bullshit, you hear him on the tail end of this one, and then we go into the breakdown. And this is where the mosh pit at Lollapalooza would just go nuts.
Oh my God, it was insane, yeah.
I think in Columbus, this is when hundreds of kids just bum-rushed the pavilion seats right now. And security couldn't do anything about it. And even though this is as hardcore as it gets, DJ Hurricane still gets some action on there.
He gets some cuts on it live, yeah. Absolutely.
Scratching in some Run DMC. And then, speaking of Billy Joel, when they played this song live, sometimes they would end it with Anthony's song. With a heart attack, tack, 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 tack.
Moving Out, yeah.
Oh, Moving Out, yeah.
Well, that's Anthony's song,
Moving Out.
Subtitled, Moving Out.
Yeah.
I know you're not the biggest Billy Joel aficionado. Especially after a karaoke incident that we won't refer to.
I got high scores on that. I didn't know any word. I did know the chorus pressure, but I didn't know any of the lyrics.
Yeah, only in the karaoke bash.
Yeah.
Their showmanship counts over any vocal knowledge or ability.
That's right. And randomly... Well, maybe not so randomly, because it is the 20th anniversary of Ill Communication, but I thought of Ad Rock smashing his guitar on SNL back in 94. A great guitar, where he jumps...
Controversial appearance.
Yeah, he swore a lot.
In the first segment, they broke out a lot of party battle flirts.
Yeah, but then he jumped off the stage... Put the guitar over his head and smashed it off the floor, and a little splinter piece flew up and almost hit DJ Hurricane. Now the scoop. I said my favorite two non-singles on Ill Communication, All Right Hear This and Do It. However, the scoop and B-Boys Making with the Freak Freak are right under those two. I guess it's nice.
Yeah, it's one of those, like, it's not, it's got that mellow vibe to it,
I think it kind of straddles the line.
Yeah, this isn't going to pump the crowd up so much.
Now, they played this live at some point, right?
I'm pretty sure they did.
Because I know Prof has a bunch of old Japanese bootlegs. And I want to say I saw or heard this at some point within the last 20 years.
One of those old ones from Italy.
Oh.
Goofing around.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and this was on there. And just while we're talking here, I'm doing some intel. According to Beastmania, shout out, one known concert of this song.
Really?
On June 13th of 94 in Milan, Italy.
Wow. And David Koresh is shouted out in this song. And I remember I read a review on Ill Communication, and they cited that reference, and they cited a few others. And when I listened to the album, I thought to myself, these are so buried. If you're going to write a review, why are you even talking about David Koresh on The Scoop? There's so much better stuff you could be writing about. So that's what, whenever I hear David Koresh, that's what I think about. Why a music reviewer would reach so deep into these unimportant lyrics when there was so much other great stuff happening on this album.
I guess because that's controversial.
Yeah.
David Koresh.
Yeah. Yes. Who still
What's
is?
What's wrong with them? Oh, so terrible.
Yeah. Now, for me, Prof, when I listen to this album hundreds of times in 94, I wonder how many times I've listened to this album in its entirety. Like I said, summer of 94, I listened to it a lot. The day it came out, I probably listened to it 20 or 30 times in a row, and I'm not lying. But after The Scoop, I kind of tune out. I kind of use the rest as a coda to this album, as a fade out.
And it's kind of a long fade out. I mean, that's like 10 minutes of fade out.
Yeah, tracks 18, 19, and 20.
I mean, this is where, for me, I think, like, and again, like, kind of go back to when, like, you know, when I first heard this, which was on cassette, that side one is, like, so much, like, for me at least, stronger than side two. Like, and I think it's these last couple that it kind of just, it's so different and so kind of low key.
Mm-hmm.
It almost hurts a little bit that's your final impression, you know what I mean?
Now,
but
the final three on side one is Sabrosa, The Update, Futterman's Role.
Yeah.
I mean, The Update's kind of chill, but Futterman's Role is more of a gritty instrumental. And then we end the album with Shambhala, Bodhisattva Vow, and Transitions. So yeah, when I think of side two, I'm not even looking at the track list right now. I think of All Right, Hear This, Do It, Heart Attack Man.
Flute Loop.
Oh yeah, and Flute Loop. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah.
So those, when I took the tape out, flipped it over, those were the ones I would look forward to.
Yeah.
And then, you know, I'd get into The Scoop. And then Ricky's theme was okay because it led into Heart Attack Man. And Eugene's Lament was unlike any other Beastie Boys song. So that was cool too. But like I said, if I'm driving around in Chaler Township right now, I'm thinking about something else.
But the interesting, so I was talking about this with somebody the other day, is that like, but back then it was like, you listen to the album, right? And you have the album as a whole, right? As a body of work.
Mm-hmm.
Which is definitely not, you know, the case really that much anymore.
No.
Right? 'Cause everybody's like, you know, single, I'll just buy the songs I like, you know, whatever. And I think I'm in the minority of a lot of people that, like, my iPod, for instance, is like all like full albums. Like, I don't really have any just random songs for the most part. And so, like, when you're listening to it, you listen to the album and you kind of realize that it was you know, this journey, and it had its highs and it had its lows, and it had its, you know, up-tempo and a little mellower, and that was part of the experience. And I think that, you know, that's not appreciated as much anymore.
No. And I have to listen to music for a living, and there's so much that comes out that people don't even realize. But back in 94, and it's just the way music was, and you could argue about this, but there was sort of a selection of music. There was, here's the mainstream music, here's indie-minded music that sells well in the mainstream, and then there's the underground. But each of those subsets had a collection of albums that you knew you had to listen to. But it felt like there wasn't thousands and thousands of albums. It felt like, okay, I could wrap my head around this, I could wrap my head around it. But it's hard to wrap your head around anything anymore.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. Maybe I hate to sound like the old bitter guy or something like that. A lot of stuff's crap anymore. I mean, you know.
But because we had that experience, this is one of the albums where if I am going driving and I still have a CD deck in my car, I will listen to this whole album.
Yeah.
Because it transports me back to 1994. And speaking of 1994, I forget if it was Spin or Rolling Stone, they recently put out a list of the top 40 albums of 1994. Oh my gosh. That list is just so deep with good stuff. Dookie.
But you pulled that out recently?
Pull what out recently?
The list.
Well, the list, it came out a few weeks ago.
Oh.
Yeah, sort of as a retrospective, like, hey, look how good 1994 was. You've got Weezer and Dookie and The Offspring and Veruca Salt, and I mean, you could go on and on. Ill Communication. It was the 20th anniversary of Woodstock?
Yeah.
Lollapalooza, The Breeders, yeah. And wow, Tribe Called Quest. And then 1994 was such a tumultuous year. There was that 30 for 30 documentary on ESPN. You've got OJ, you've got Arnold Palmer playing in his last major tournament. A lot of crazy things that 1994 was a special year. You go back in your time machine. And you tell me that was not... It was the year me and Prof became better friends. It was the year Prof D joined the D-Boys.
You go back in your time machine. I challenge you to find a better year than 1994, young man.
94 stuck with me. There was something about 1994. And it was the year Kurt Cobain died in 1994. But alternative music was right up in front on MTV and on modern rock radio.
Yep. Yeah, and a lot of good hip-hop around then. Whereas, for me, it was like kind of like, that was almost like the year, like 94, 95, 96, where like kind of hip-hop was more in the mainstream, and then it almost went downhill after that.
Yeah.
So you still had like some, like, you know, good albums and groups and MCs that were around then that were still putting out some good stuff.
When was The Chronic? Was that 90?
Was that 93?
I 94. It was big in 93, but then it probably spilled over into 94, and I think Snoop's album was 95 maybe? So even gangster rap was awesome in 94. I mean, it was in its heyday back then.
So I'm doing all this research behind the scenes here. Chronic came out in December of 92.
Okay.
Which means then that probably Snoop was 93 or early 94.
I remember Snoop
with his debut.
Okay. Because I remember the Beastie Boys played the VMAs in 94. And I want to say Snoop either played that year or the year after. Speaking of The Chronic, you know that bass line that the Beastie Boys use in Pass the Mic? And then the same bass line is sampled on the Chronic. I wonder who the Beastie Boys used it first, right?
Sure.
Because Check Your Head came out in 92. Early 92.
Yeah.
So that leads us to transition. Right. That leads us to transitions. The second Beastie Boys album in a row with a very chill instrumental. And then the next Beastie Boys album, was it, does Instant Death close out Hello Nasty?
Instant Death does indeed close out Hello Nasty.
And that's almost, you know, that's not in your face either.
Right.
And then To the Five Boroughs is We Got The.
That is We Got The, very good.
That ends, that's a nice ending.
Yeah.
And then...
Then you got the Lisa full voice routine.
Mm-hmm.
And now Hot Sauce.
Yes. And Ill Communication, happy birthday. You are 20 years old. Wow. We did it, Prof.
And still holds up, I will say.
Oh, whew. That was fun. Like I said, we could have done a whole podcast on each track on that album.
Yeah.
we might not have talked.
It would have been 4.5 hours.
We might not have talked about the song, but we would have talked about something.
That's right. Well, it's all loosely related.
And I want to let everyone know that the Brouhaha, we're still going. Still trying to get that interview with Kate Schallenbach. Prof, you put me in touch with her, and then I actually saw her late last year. She emailed me a couple months ago, and she said, I owe you a podcast. And I said, all right, let me know when you want to do it. She hasn't gotten back to me yet, but...
She's busy.
She is busy, but...
I have to ask, what did you think of the Luscious Jackson album?
I liked it.
I liked it a lot.
Yeah. And I can't wait to see them live. They played one live show in New York City, and I was out of town that day, so I missed it.
And I saw the
set list, too, and I thought, ooh, yeah, you played all the right songs.
Well, I remember going to see them with you, like, back in the 90s.
Mm-hmm.
They put on a good show.
I know.
When did we see them at...
Metropole.
Metropole.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they remember me making the sign for Viv. Remember I had a big poster board sign of Viv?
Yeah, I remember you were a little obsessed with Viv.
I had a crush on Viv.
Well, you thought she was like the B-girl.
Oh, yeah, I was in love with Viv.
Yeah, she was featured prominently. Don't ask me why, but I was looking at old Milliot magazine. Past episodes, and there was a special B-girl issue.
Oh man!
And Viv was featured prominently.
Well, she left the band and broke my heart.
Yeah. Oh well.
All right. So closing thoughts on the 20th anniversary of Ill Communication, Prof.
Closing thoughts is that. You know, I think I'm with you that there's a lot of memories for me wrapped around that album. I think it's a really, you know, solid, strong album. I think any more, I can't help anytime I listen to any Beastie Boys music to be just a little bit sad that we'll never get any more. But
yeah,
I think it's important to remember the good times and the good memories and the good music and the impact that it had on everybody and focus on that. So.
Yep. Good stuff. And real quick before we go, just some thoughts on Ill Communication. Green cassette tape. Oh. And speaking of it being a companion piece to Check Your Head, the layout of the CDs actually almost looked identical. Check Your Head was red. Ill Communication was green, and then that Draftsman font throughout the liner notes.
Yep.
I remember when Juxtapose magazine came out, they had something about all the artists that work with the Beastie Boys. I think it was a friend of theirs who just had really good handwriting. And I believe he handwrote all of the liner notes.
Really?
Yeah. And as someone who made homemade t-shirts, it was easy to do that font without using a lot of marker. For example, the Check Your Head font, you had to use a little more ink. So I was like, oh, right, finally a thin font I can use. This is going to save on my markers. So that worked out for me in 1994. And then one more thing. I might have more things than one more thing, but good pictures inside of the Beastie Boys on their instruments. When you open the CD, you have that nice picture of the Beastie Boys bouncing on the Check Your Head tour. And you've got that very spiritual, earthy picture in the liner notes with tree and Mother Earth and the eyeball on top of the earth. MCA wanted that to be the album cover. And the Beastie Boys, I guess, always had these votes. And they said, no, that ain't going to be the album cover. So they let MCA use that picture on the inside of the album, but not the outside. Yeah. And then the nice family shot of the Beastie Boys with AWOL, Eric Bobo, Mike D, Money Mark, MCA, Ad Rock, Hurricane, and Mario C, who produced this album.
He likes to keep it clean, I hear.
What's his shout out in Sure Shot?
Does Mario C, you can't sign on that.
Because he's in the video.
Whatever, yeah.
Shoot. Well, you guys know what I'm talking about.
Yeah. Hey, the other thing we should probably mention, and it's not really part of the album proper, but we did continue in this era, if you count the B-sides, the token MCA solo track.
Aha, Resolution Time.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and the B-sides were great.
When I got it, I'm like, where's the MCA track? What's going on?
No. Prof, he has MCA tracks on this, but Asatva Vowel, I believe, is MCA, and I think the update's MCA too. So he put out three token MCA tracks during this time frame.
Well, the update was definitely, when they performed it live, they did, like, everybody jumped in and took parts.
Yeah. But I think, but on recording, it's the update.
I guess you're right.
Yeah. Sorry, you don't win the diorama tonight.
Oh, well.
Yeah, the B-sides, Mullet Head, Dope Little Song, Resolution Time, The Vibes.
Son of Neckbone.
The remixes. Yeah. The Root Down EP?
It was definitely, I think as far as like B-sides and remixes, I think that was like my favorite album as far as that category goes.
Yeah.
There's a lot of really strong stuff on there. The Vibes I love. I always thought that should have been on the album proper.
I always thought The Vibes would be such a great opening track live.
Yeah. Mullet Head?
Mullet Head. Both the instrumental and the one with lyrics. Oh, okay. I thought I might have said it. But yeah, Mullet Head was great.
Yeah.
I remember seeing footage of them trying to perform that live once, and that was also a mess.
I remember performing that live for your birthday one year.
was it a mess?
It was, I don't know. That was the only time the D-Boys performed without you. And we did it for your birthday. And it was me and Joe and Bob, I think, was
Troy,
there.
Troy, I would think.
Oh, and Troy, that's right.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. Don't forget about Smooth.
Yeah. But we did a Mullet Head cover.
Mullet.
Or whatever that's worth.
I wanted to add one more thing, and now I totally forgot what I wanted to say. So we were talking about Mullet Head. This will be my closing thought, because Prof and I, we could talk for hours, so we should wrap this up. But talking about the old...
How many one more things are we going to do
this
here?
This is it. This is it for me, and then I'll let you go one more if you want. But We're well over an hour right now. You were talking about the olden days. So you would get a single and music video on MTV before the album ever came out. They still do that today. You get the album, but then the Beastie Boys and other bands too would put out maxi singles.
Yep.
So you would go to the store and you would get the Get It Together maxi single. So you get the single, you get a couple remixes, you get two or three new songs that you never heard before. That was awesome. And then you get the Sure Shot maxi single, right? That was the red cover one, and the kid's like, Ma, what are you giving me? And you get the song, you get a couple remixes, and you get two or three new songs that you never heard before. And they were great. They could have been on the album. So it wasn't that the Beastie Boys just put out an album and was like, here, that's it. It was this whole process. And then they would swing through your town and you would see them live. So this magic happened throughout the course of a year. And then you would hope that your favorite band would play the VMAs and you would hope that your favorite band would play Letterman or SNL. So a whole album cycle, the magic continued for a good year.
And you got all of that.
You got all that, and you didn't have to listen to thousands and thousands of albums, so you would go home and you would listen to that maxi single over and over and over again. And you don't have that experience in 2014.
No, you do not. Kids, you're missing out.
So yes, you have your little iPod shuffle and that has 2,000 songs on it. And yes, in 1994, we had to bring boxes and boxes of tapes on road trips, but there was something special about that. And now I'm done. I'm done. Your turn. You can say
no,
one.
No, I'm done. Ended on that note. I think that's a great note to end.
Prof, thank you for doing this.
It has been a pleasure, sir.
For Prof D, my name is Jim Shear. Happy 20th birthday, Ill Communication. We will see Yens later.
That's it. That's all. That's all there is. Come on.
Yo, we gonna end it on a 1, 2, 3 note. Are you ready? 1, 2, 1, 2, 3.
Ah! Guarantee we bring the brouhaha.
Cause it's a brouhaha.